never mind. Keep talking. That's true. We don't. Oh, hear that theme music? That means we're on. And just discussing. So anyway, one of the topics is the clear long-term superiority of Ohio State as the top team in the United States.
Two of your guests are going to walk out right now.
Like, but
seriously.
We go through phases. We happen to be in a down phase.
I don't think there's any question that. Oh, I guess we should introduce everybody. Chuck Coughlin's in the house. And back again, thank you very much. And remember, Chuck promised smooth sailing with Governor Brewer when she came in. Last time you were on the show, she wasn't in yet, I don't think.
I think she may have just started.
Just starting, yeah.
She's now had her veteran stripes applied.
Yes, she has. And Chuck promised everything is going to go super smoothly, no problems. And so we'll get an update on that. Mark Cordes, thank you, sir. And Steve Clausen. And Carrie Dozer is in Flagstaff this week.
She's a smart one in the group.
Yeah, hanging out, you know, with all the big shots up there at, you know, the country club. So that's okay. But she'll be back soon. So anyway, do we need to discuss it? Ohio State, clearly. I would say Ohio State.
Don't tolerate.
Ohio State, Arizona State. Top two, clearly, college sports schools. And I don't know, I put Michigan, they're in the top 10 still, I think. 9, 10, something like that. What do you think, Mark?
They, well, I don't, you know, I don't, I got to be honest with you, I don't follow it that much, but just if you go back recent
history.
Well,
Grant doesn't either.
Maybe the last 10 times they've met.
Yeah, who's won?
What's been the result?
Uh-huh. It's Ohio State, isn't it?
Ohio State's been on a little bit of a roll here, but in terms of Arizona State, let's put it to you this way. Michigan has been to more Rose Bowls in this decade than Ohio State has been to.
No, we're not just
history.
Talking about football. We're talking about all sports.
Oh, all
and all
that's,
sports.
That's,
hockey,
that's
basketball, baseball.
But hockey, let's just start right now with baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Arizona State, College World Series.
And, sure.
And let's just leave it at that.
Did you watch the LPGA tournament?
Where was that gal from?
Arizona State. Very,
fantastic.
Yeah,
that's
go.
Good.
Yeah.
That's
go.
Good. And, you know, oh, the U.S.
Sweden,
Open this week. U.S. Open this week.
Yeah.
Phil Mickelson will be the sentimental favorite. Where do you go?
ASU.
Oh, yeah, Arizona State.
And
that's
who
right.
was
okay.
that swimmer? I can't remember his name that went to Michigan. I think he won a medal or two. Yeah,
Michael
something.
Phelps.
Yeah.
Oh, the
yeah.
long man.
Come
long
on now.
Hey.
All right. No, I put you in the top 10. You're definitely in the top 10.
Ann Arbor's like
I'm
Berkeley.
I'm really grateful. Condone that favor upon the University of Michigan.
Okay.
I got to be honest with you. I don't follow all that stuff that much, but I do know that most of the episodes of Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
ASU.
Yes, we dominate there too.
When I moved out here, I was like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah.
Hey, there's a rumor, there's a thing in the Big Ten that says nine, you know, the what has it go? Nine out of 10 pretty girls, nine out of 10 girls in the Big Ten are pretty, the 10th one goes to Michigan.
Really? Is that true?
Oh, it's grim.
Yeah. But I will tell you this.
I want to save my sister from that situation.
But you just want to, I would point out that. I don't even know that. I'd never heard that before. I wouldn't have assumed that was true. But at Occidental, I'm confident we have you beat there, too.
I don't know. It's a brainy schools. They're both brainy schools.
Yeah.
And, you know,
oh, they're really brainy at Oxy. Let me tell you.
Wrap them up in, you wrap them up in three or four layers of clothing in the middle of the winter. And,
that's
you know,
better. You know, want them wrapped up. Trust me.
This will surprise you, but the best party school for a football game
yes.
that I've ever seen is in the Big Ten. It's not Michigan. It's Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
On Wisconsin.
Over the top.
Well, they start the pre-party on Monday.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah they're already getting ready for the season opener tonight.
But the women there,
they
by
are,
and large, they are by and large. That's been proven.
Well, there's the whole
but seriously. Okay, let's start out with Chuck here. The legislature and the governor, we're here in the middle of June. Fiscal year ends in a couple of weeks here, and we still don't have a budget. So we've been following along here, and, you know, I guess the casual observer would think since the Republicans control both houses and the governor's chair, it should be easier. I think what I've been saying is that Governor Brewer, she inherited this mess. She certainly didn't have anything to do with it. And she's tried to come up with a realistic approach. She's certainly not someone who's ever supported tax increases or big government or anything like that. But she does happen to be the person who's in the governor's chair. And rather than gut public education rather than gut social services in this state, with long-term consequences. She's put forward at least, you know, some sort of plan here that would allow us to go forward. But her options seem to be pretty slim. The Democrats, one thing I talked about last week was, as you remember, Chuck, by the way, I don't know if I pointed this out, Chuck was the Chuck was our representative for the Attorney General's office at the legislature when I took office. He came with me. And
I got kicked out during that.
Sometime thereafter, he came to me with some news. And he said, I've been banned from the House. I said, well, you know, I'm no expert here, but there's only two houses. That's not good, is it? And Jane Hull banned him from the House. Now, he points out, I'm sure you will, that I had a little bit of rough agenda down there for...
Most of the agenda. It wasn't a problem because the net effect of that was I just went back to the Senate, which was then, of course, controlled by the Democrats.
Right.
And we revived your legislation every time with the Democrats.
Right, exactly. Well, that was my point, that in my 8 years there, I think we hardly lost anything ever over there. Now, a lot of it was very defensive. It was trying to keep something bad from happening, either to the office or to the environment or civil rights or whatever. But the way we prevailed was by getting all the Democratic votes and a handful of Republican votes, and we were able to do it. Now, that hasn't happened this time, and the governor and the Republicans don't seem to be able to make this happen. So we're taping now on Monday. It's Monday afternoon. So where are we at here? Because when I just checked my little Arizona Guardian updates, it said the Republicans may be heading to court.
Yeah.
That's very strange.
She'd worked with her staff most of the weekend to try and come up and work within the confines of the budget, which was passed by the House and the Senate this past week.
It's a train going by.
fans of the show.
Could be the legislature leaving town.
Oh, wait a minute. It says, honk if you think Arpaio's a jerk. Okay. Hey, you're going to have to get rid of that sign or we won't have any peace.
She worked most of the weekend with her staff. The effort was to try and work within the budget, which was passed by the legislature, and come up with and try and come towards them in the hopes that they would come a little bit towards her. And I believe that they'd made a lot of progress on that point over the weekend. I think she took to heart some of the criticisms from the Republican side that she was not robust enough on some of the permanent cuts. I think her budget out of the gate was like $275 million. Theirs was like $612. And one of the things she's consistently said is that we needed to bring the spending line down in a permanent way because, you know, we have a permanent rate of growth of about 7.5% in the state budget, and the economy, of course, is not doing that. So you have to do that. So we spent a good deal of time.
What causes that?
Mandated spending for healthcare, education spending, fixed rates of growth due to voter mandates and federal law.
Okay. So it has to go up so much each month.
It has to go up, yeah, but you also have an ability to
counterbalance it in other areas.
What benefits you're providing
right.
and those
okay.
types of things. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is handicapped in this session by the fact that you have a federal stimulus plan, which handcuffs some of those things. If you're going to take the money, you have to maintain levels of spending.
Right.
Nevertheless, they were apart. So she spent a good deal of time over the weekend trying to move. They began some discussions yesterday, and it didn't get very far. Apparently, they're...
And who is she talking with? She talks with the Speaker of the House?
The President and their staffs in the room. And I think... And I'm a fan of all three. I admire them all.
Really?
I do. I like Bob Burns a lot. I've been a friend of Bob Burns. But, you know, Bob's never been the president of the Senate. Bob's never been in this type of position before. He's always been sort of he's been the appropriations chairman, which is a very different role than he's in right now.
Oh, yeah.
In trying to lead a body. It requires a lot of compromise. And I think the frustration levels are boiled very high right now on all sides. And apparently he walked out of the negotiations last night. So that prompted...
Just got up and walked out?
Just got up and walked out.
Wow.
And said, you know, not much and left. And so that left her with, of course, the clock is ticking.
And she's in there herself?
She was in there with the speaker. That continued on, I guess, for about half an hour, 45 minutes after that. But it takes all three of them to be there. So what she was concerned about is that they have these two bills which they've passed, or the budgets which they've passed.
Right. And they're sitting on them.
Not forwarded to her.
Why are they doing that?
Well, I think they're using it as a negotiating tool, that this is what they have, because they're pretty confident if they sent those up as is right now,
they'll be vetoed.
They would be vetoed. Okay. And so whatever leverage they have by the votes they've collected would evaporate at that point, and they'd be back to square zero. So the idea was to negotiate within the confines of that and see if they could come up, but it's going to require all parties to move. And, you know, I was hopeful over the weekend that that would happen. I guess I still need to be hopeful that that will happen, because ultimately if that doesn't happen, you end up having to go build a budget probably outside of the Republican caucus.
Meaning you got to go to the Democrats.
You got to go to the Democrats and then a minority of Republicans to go pass it, which, you know, from a economic standpoint, I don't think is a good idea.
What does that mean?
It drives up spending. You're going to have to drive up spending. You don't get as many of the cuts that you actually need.
What about these cuts in education?
Right now, as you in the 09 budget, they passed about 2% of the cuts were on education. One of the big things that they're apart on this time is to what degree K through 12 and universities will be cut as well in the 2010 budget.
What if you didn't cut them at all?
I don't think it's possible, quite frankly. Now, one of the things that she had talked about was the idea of passing an additional tax, you know, passing a tax this fall.
Right.
And maybe with the idea if that passed, then you could buy some of those cuts back next year.
Right.
So you'd pass a budget now, a balanced budget with those cuts in place, which mm-hmm. satisfies, Republican majorities. But where she is, in more of the middle of the road here, is go past the tax and then perhaps buy or trigger some of those cuts back.
Okay.
But, you know, here's the 100,000-foot view. People don't want to get buried in the details of this. I mean, we're really having a war within the Republican Party, a civil war, on whether we can govern. Mm-hmm. That's really what this is about. You know, we've suffered losses on a national scale, and this last time President Obama has moved the agenda hard to the left in terms of the intrusiveness of government into the economy. And we still have a good group of Republicans that I would call semi-libertarian that are out here that don't feel government has any role, really. I mean, the Ron Goulds of this world, you know, who'd rather,
right.
you know, cut.
Right.
Which government is
there. He's a guy who flies the Confederate flag in Lake Havasu.
Yeah, and there's, you know, it's a point of view. It's not my point of view. It's clearly not the governor's point of view.
The guy who killed the Holocaust guard had a point of view, but, you know.
Right. So it doesn't.
It's a low threshold.
You know, so how do you build a budget with those folks?
Right.
Are you willing to come? There's two Republicans in the Senate right now that aren't on the budget. That's Senator Tip Scheraney and Senator Allen. Idea would be you could maybe get their votes and a couple
right.
other Democrats and, you know, let some of these more really hardcore conservative Republicans. I don't think ideology at a point where we are right now facing a $4 billion budget deficit, as you indicated earlier, not mm-hmm. of her creating.
Right.
There's really not a point here where we can let ideology dictate our answers. This is a practical public policy discussion about what we can do mm-hmm. In order to put the state in a position to take care of those who most need to be cared for, those people who are most vulnerable in our populations, to not sacrifice the progress we've made in public education and higher education, and yet trim government, shrink it back to the point where we can continue to grow and prosper when the economy recovers. I don't think anybody that I know of and respect would say that you cannot cut government. I mean, it's just anything that's big, you of course can do that.
Sure you can.
It just takes a thoughtful mind.
But don't you think that the Democrats over there are correct when they say that if we make cuts now, in, for example, in the university budgets,
yes.
that this has an effect that you potentially don't recover from for quite a period of time. And we talk about Arizona State just as an example. Arizona State under Dr. Crow is a school that, in my view anyway, is on its way up. He's had really an amazing vision. So you had a school that was just kind of your average old state school, and all of a sudden it set a higher goal for itself. through Dr. Crow.
Yeah.
You attracted tremendous people here. You talk about the Michigans of the world, schools like that, frankly, that are at the top of the food chain academically. And Arizona State was never there. And yet here is a guy like Crow moving them in that direction. But if you don't support him, if we have cuts there, if we raise tuition out of sight to try to make up for it, you step backwards. And then what happens is, and it's already happening, top professors who came here start to leave. And then some more start to leave. And this program closes. Then that program closes. And then pretty soon, in my view, Dr. Crow leaves. And then you're done.
Yeah.
And I think people ought to realize that. You are done for quite a period of time because no one worth their salt is going to come here to replace Crow when Crow really was sending the message, don't come, because they're not committed to public education here.
That is the point.
So you can't let that happen.
That is the point the governor holds. I mean, she knows you have to you have to balance the budget. You have to cut some. But at what point do you so retard your ability to economic growth through these cuts to grow that you've done damage that you cannot recover from?
Yeah.
And that is the discussion.
Yeah.
Can Republicans in a majority execute a policy that preserves those institutions to the greatest extent possible without yet having to do the things you need to do to balance the budget to put us in a position to grow?
Right.
No, I heard Craig Barrett say earlier this year in a meeting with me, the former CEO of Intel.
Right.
He said, I do not have to put another job in North America as a company forever.
Right.
I only will be in North America because of the ability to recruit and retain hot, talent.
Right. And that's not necessarily Arizona right now. That's the problem.
No, and that's what we're trying to build. That is the goal of what Dr. Crow and the University of Arizona and NAU, and they're trying to pull this together.
And K through 12 here.
K through 12. And
there's another problem that people there ought to keep in mind. And I understand it's a crisis situation. So that's why, for example, the idea of maybe a temporary sales tax, or maybe you go the other direction and you do the loans, because I don't like that necessarily, but it's a crisis situation, hopefully short term, meaning the next year or two. I understand all of that. But if you make these cuts that these rockheads basically want to make, I think you go way backwards to a point from which you really don't recover for quite a while. And there's another little point that people forget, and that is the kids who are in school right now, this is it for them. So you want to price everybody out at Arizona State by, doubling and tripling their tuition over a period of...
They've already done.
Yeah, ridiculous. At the same time that you're having top people leave and you're cutting back, this is it for the kids who are there now. What if you're in K through 12 right now? A lot of the people who listen to the show, we have kids in elementary school right now. Hey, they can't wait for Arizona to get its act together for 20 years from now.
We can have this discussion, and we can talk about that as, a reasonable course of action. We can find that most people who would tune in and probably agree with us on the points we're making. The problem is that the system we elect people in does not reflect the majority of people at large.
That's a big problem.
It reflects by virtue of a series of decisions we've made, both from the Civil Rights Act in 1964, which creates safe districts. That's sort of the base level where you take minority populations and you fence them off in one area. Well, by its very nature, then you've created other safe districts on the other side
Correct.
Of the equation.
This is the problem. They're not competitive.
On top of that, so a legislator going down there has to make a name for themselves in the first two years they're down there, because they got to throw a bomb, make a headline. They're not there to learn.
Right.
And then finally the coup de grace was clean elections,
right,
where we've now empowered these very small constituencies to go elect. We've taken market viability. The true market
Everybody's
viability
in.
Of going to raise money and saying, do you like my ideas? Am I a credible spokesperson for things that you believe in? And you've taken that out of the equation. You've replaced it with public money, where you can go to very narrow constituencies and get a number of $5 contributions, and then you're elected.
So here's
you have hard left legislators. There's only about a half a dozen legislators down there
in the middle.
I would characterize their elections as being up for grabs in the general election.
That's the problem. And people always ask, why is Arizona, why do we always have these problems? Is Arizona really that nutty? And in my view, the answer is no, Arizona's not nutty in the least. I think Arizona is very reasonable. And the evidence of that is just look at the general elections. Look at who they vote for president. Look at who they vote for governor, for attorney general, for Senate. Look at the ballot propositions. I mean, Arizona was, turned down the big ban on gay marriage and benefits.
Yep.
Turned that down.
Yep.
Came back and passed it when you're just leaving it at marriage. Turned down tort reform despite a gigantic effort against it. Passed the smoking bans. It's really pretty moderate electorate out there. And yet, you've got a Democrat governor elected the last two times, a Democrat attorney general elected the last three times.
We did a survey earlier this year with Margaret Kensky in Tucson. We asked people, what's your proclivity for balancing the budget?
Right.
Tax increases, spending cuts, or a mix of both? And people were, it was pretty much a third and a third and a third. And so that dictates the solution. If the public is there at about a third,
let's go through that. What's happened is, and as you know, I mean, I was the co-chairman for a number of these efforts, which did pass, which tried to change things so maybe we could have a legislature that was a little more reflective. One of the things, we had open primaries. I did that with Paul Johnson. And before that really got to the ballot, the legislature kind of panicked and said, "Well, okay, you can let's do it.
You can vote in either one." Which is helpful.
I thought that was
they
great.
Don't participate in any great number, but the opportunity.
The opportunity's there. So then we went back and we said, "Okay, let's take it out of the legislature's hands and let's put it to an independent commission." And we got that passed. I was co-chairman of that with Jim Peterson and some other guys. Okay, that has had some marginal benefit, but not much, and the main reason is because of the things you said, because competitiveness goes down the line here to other things.
Civil Rights Act 64. Right. You can't change federal law with the state.
Right.
The
so state. Consequently, we have the situation all over the state where you can run in a Republican or Democratic primary, depending on the district. You can be far right, you can be far left, although it's more far right. There's more examples of that. And if you can somehow eke out enough votes to win the primary, you're in.
You're good to go.
Because a Democrat cannot win in that district.
Right.
Just so normally, let's just take Tempe, for example. Tempe is very competitive over there. If you got the Republican nomination in Tempe for the legislature, and you were some sort of bomb thrower, or you had the Confederate flag up at your house, like this guy from Lake Havasu, you would be bounced because a Democrat would beat you.
Yeah.
Republicans have won there, Democrats have won there. That tends to balance things out. But if you're from Lake Havasu, apparently, if you win the primary, you're in.
You're in.
And that's the problem.
Inequity in the system.
And if you get enough of those, then...
You do have enough of them.
So the legislature does not reflect the Arizona as a whole.
Matrix on top of what now is a $4 billion, 40% of the state's budget, which we were counting on being there, is no longer there.
Right.
So now you have a management structure that you have to work within to try and go solve unarguably the largest fiscal crisis in the history of the state. So
Without
why are
question.
We having problems? I think we just decided why we're having problems. Am I still hopeful that we can come to some conclusion? I am. I would like Republicans to be able to say we can govern. I would like to be able to say that we can work together
and govern in a crisis.
And govern in a crisis and govern thoughtfully so that we don't do unmitigated damage to the long-term future of the state. That we preserve those things which we will need, as we discussed earlier, to grow and to prosper in the future. Without those,
so that the Craig Barretts of the world will want to come and build in Arizona, have their place, people in Arizona.
We're teed up perfectly for that right now. California is, our crisis is bad, California's is a complete and utter disaster.
Well, let me give you
And we have an opportunity as a state.
Sure we do.
To go put out a "we're open for business" sign to have the...
Doesn't look good, though, to me.
The sound of our commerce be the music which they hear and come. I mean, we have an opportunity over these next 3 to 5 years to go say, we could drop some business property taxes here. Mm-hmm. We could create some better attractive you know, environments for capital.
Yes.
And we could
make this the most business friendly state, in my
education
opinion.
So people right. so companies coming here know that they can have the training and the engineering degrees and the things that they will need to have.
Why North Carolina? Because they did
Duke,
it.
North Carolina.
They did it.
Commerce Clause, they've done it.
Why don't we do it?
Right. It's clearly.
We don't care.
They have that research triangle
Let's
in Carolina.
Do it.
We have the ability to do that. Everybody said that's what we need to be able to do. It's not just a lemming approach. We've seen what works. And
it
what
can
doesn't.
Work. Okay. Let me. I got a couple more questions for you. Now, I want to come back to tactics here, but so I don't forget about it. You know, the Arizona Constitution does not say that we have to balance a budget. Our founders actually put a debt in. You can have a debt, according to them, but it was very, you know, it was for 1912.
Yeah.
But if you extrapolated that forward, I don't know if anyone's ever done that, it would be a pretty big debt, I would think. So my point is, they believed in, they didn't say balanced budget. It was very simple to say that. They said, whatever it is, I can't remember the number, $320,000 or something like that. Again, which was a lot of money in those days. So if the founding fathers did not think it was that essential to balance the budget, is there an argument to be made to go back to the voters and say, let's index that?
I don't know that it would be supportive. I think people do like the notion of government being in balance, even though it's a fiction.
It really hamstrings you. For example, the federal government right now, the United States, we would be done. We would be sunk if we had that same...
But,
same deal.
Of course, the difference being we don't print the money here. You know, we have to live within the constraints. And I think it is a healthy thing. I personally believe it's a healthy thing to have as a guidepost. You know, when we do adopt a budget we just got through an 2009. It's never been balanced.
Right.
They're carrying forward $200 million
right.
in debt.
It's a lot of myths there.
So that's
well, just something to consider.
But
that
it's a guidepost.
Because people think we have that Arizona... If we go back to the founding fathers, that they said that we should balance a budget, and that's not the case.
Right.
That's a myth.
It is it will be a myth whenever they do sign a budget into law down there.
That it's balanced
year,
anyway.
That it won't be. We'll be back here without new revenues coming into the system. The governor today, she said publicly today, she was willing to sign a budget for 10.
Yeah.
That did not account for new revenues, that had no new revenues in it. So we'd balance it with the existing portfolio.
How do you do that?
Well, I think you do some cuts. You maybe do some borrowing that they've added.
What's wrong with borrowing?
Well, it depends if you borrow lottery money. I mean, you're borrowing against future lottery proceeds.
Oh, okay. This is what you're saying by borrowing.
You're digging your hole deeper in out years, which you really don't want to do.
No, that's true.
But under the
circumstances in a crisis,
right now,
as
she said from the very first time that she was, you know, when it was known that she would probably assume this office, that she would she knew, and one thing I know about her, her instincts are always good. She has really, really good instincts. She said, without prompting from anybody, from day one, all things are on the table. And you remember there was a tsunami
of criticism
from the right about, well, you can't do taxes. Well, you know, some of the brightest economists in the state who were conservative, Bob Robb, your former colleague, you know, your former classmate, you know, all of them came to me and said, you're not going to be able to do this without some type of new revenue. And so she
But see, the difference is Bob is he's a conservative, but he's a reasonable person. He's an intelligent person. He's not just a knee-jerk, oh, no. He didn't sign the pledge.
You know what I
keep
reminding people of when they start to criticize her, the governor, that is, I remind them of the first big vote she cast when she was at the legislature.
Is that Meekum?
She voted not to impeach Ev Meekum, which in a historical respect was the right vote to cast.
I agree with you on
because
that.
Because he would have been recalled eventually. I mean, that was happening. And the impeachment
two things happened there people forget about. One, he was impeached, and I don't think he should have been impeached.
Right.
And he was indicted by my predecessor, and he shouldn't have been indicted. He ended up being acquitted of that. And I thought that was a bum deal, too. Just take it back to the people. We elected a meathead. Let's go.
As a freshman legislator, she called it right.
Yep.
But she was in a minority, and she had the courage to stand there and make that call.
Now, she was from...
Just as today.
She was from the West Side.
She was from Sun City. I mean, she was from pretty much, you know, very conservative territory.
But she didn't she date Ev Meekum when she was in high school or something, if I remember right? Oh, she dated his hairpiece, not him. OK. Okay, it was on somebody else at the time.
No, I think Ev was a little ahead of her time.
Oh, really?
I remember you fancying him, though. I remember you.
Who, Ev?
Yeah, you. I think you were. Weren't you building some kind of antenna to communicate with him?
That was my predecessor, too. I took that down. And
what? Wait. Wait, you can't just gloss over that. What was that?
No. Meekum claimed at one time, you know, he's only in a little over a year. He claimed that the Attorney General had was monitoring his calls and conversations
and his thoughts
through some sort of beam over there.
In fact,
he was serious.
The mythology goes on today with Senator Gould's mustache. They believe that he's growing it that big. And I heard that on his Twitter page today, that he's growing it that big to filter out the gases they pump into the chamber that attempt to mind control him.
You know what? He's got a hell of a record relieving for the Diamondbacks now, though. It says 12 times he's come in and given up no runs. Yeah, he's great. I think he's great. Now, before we leave this topic, I don't know if you guys saw this, but a very famous person in Republican circles, Grover Norquist, was in the news here. He's been butting his head into the ridiculous. Oh, I said no, butting, sticking his nose.
Yes.
Butt and head seem to go together with Norquist. sticking his nose into Arizona politics. And in doing so, he in his missives, was referring to the governor of our state as Governor Coughlin.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Way to go. Congratulations.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad I have but one subhead to give for my country. Well, Grover is doing his bit to promote his agenda, which is Americans for Tax Reform and Prosperity, which is essentially a one-trick pony. That
yeah,
is the
no new taxes.
Tax crusade across the country.
No matter what.
And he's made a career in running that game. And,
yep.
You know, they have a place in the Republican Party. Even our chairman of our party out here, Randy Pullen, admonished him last week as a guy, you know, get back in your part of the party. You don't run the Republican Party.
Right. Why does everybody kiss his ass?
Because he runs around and he had one of his bits, you know, we've got to pay attention to people's bits, is to get everybody to sign the tax pledge.
Right.
And that is looked upon in Republican primaries as sort of holy grail.
Right.
You know, did they sign the pledge or did you not sign the pledge? And, you know, heretofore, it's been pretty easy in the flush times of our economy. You know, who's going to raise taxes when revenues are coming in? Well, sure, I'll sign the pledge. Well, I think he's going to have a tougher time in the future getting people to subscribe. So, you know, he's out making his name for himself, and here's the governor. And what they tried to blame me on is that this tax increase is my idea because – essentially, the claim would go that, you know, I'm going to run the campaign, so I'm going to make, you know, lots of
money. Oh, okay.
So there you go. It's my it's a straw man argument. It's designed to go in, you know, if you can't win the argument, attack the man.
Also,
you know that one, right?
There's another part of that also, and that is, and this went to the deal where they were knocking you guys for this leaked memo out there that maybe would mount campaigns in the districts of people who were being obstinate on this.
They spun that up pretty nicely.
Yeah, they did. Well, the way that works is if you don't have the guts to go after the office holder, then you just go after the aide or the campaign person or somebody else. And that's an age-old thing.
Yeah, we did the memo. The memo was designed to much differently than it was interpreted. It was designed to sell the governor's budget package. Say, you know, as you introed the package here, here's a moderate middle course without having to take ginormous cuts to public education, universities. We'd ask the voters for some additional temporary revenues. We'd slow the rate of growth. You know, we'd have third-party voices. You know,
well, it only makes sense. You get a campaign behind it.
Moderate approach.
Okay.
And encourage legislators to look at that.
One last subject for Mr. Coughlin, and that is, don't you think that one of the things the governor could do here that's been pushed front and center with our lack of revenues is to appoint a committee, a commission, somebody, or do it herself, somebody, come up with a new plan of how to fund education in this state. I mean, this thing is way old. Arizona looks very different. Yeah.
It's Byzantine way to fund K through 12.
It doesn't make sense.
And what I said to my Republican friends is, you know, get a term-limited governor and we can make some of those decisions. The hard part about that is most of the property taxes that go to fund public education come from business.
Right.
And it's a disproportionate share in Arizona. I grew up in Michigan, like Steve grew up in Michigan. You know, your property taxes on a home are much higher in those states than they are out here, because those are the places that, you know, your homes, where kids grew up, they fund the education.
Right.
Here we have not adopted that model. There are other models available, that being just one of them.
But we need to have that discussion.
We need to have a substantive discussion.
Yes.
To get away from it is the most.
It's got to be done.
I've been in state government 25 years, and I can't tell you how we fund public education.
Yeah.
It is a you got to go down to guys like Kevin McCarthy and
right.
Chuck Essex. And
right.
I mean, there's these Svengalis of education finance tax that will tell you how we get money to
right.
schools.
Right.
And it's just. Anything that's that complicated, just like the tax code,
yep.
needs to be reformed. It
right.
needs to be changed to make it simple.
So we got to do it.
You know, here's the number that each student should get. Here's where it comes from. Here's your sources of funds. This is what goes with each student. That student goes to this school or that school. That's the amount of money.
But here's what's not going to work. We know that. We talked a lot there about education and its importance to the economy in Arizona. Its importance just to the future of Arizona, to Arizona families. And what's not going to work is just to continue to have this battle year after year, budget after budget. The universities down there are trying to scrimp and save, and then what they can't get, they adjust the tuition,
right.
the K through 12. Now we have charter schools, which you know I think will ultimately be the hope,
yep.
and maybe the savior for public schools here by providing competition to the public schools, and yet they're underfunded. It's just a huge mess here. So again, it's.
Elects these people.
Correct.
And it does not reward. There is no political system here does not reward leadership.
Well, then let me throw this out to you, because you said several times that the Republicans need to show that they can govern.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just as a caveat, you mentioned how Obama, the president, has taken us to the left in. Government intervention and economic policy, and I would say that was started under President Bush in the last 3 or 4 months of his term, you know, responding to the crisis. So, you know, it seems to be the same thing. Whether you want to or don't want to, you know, who knows? But it's just the way it was. But maybe the Republicans can't govern. And the reason they can't govern may be because of this ideological split between moderates and conservatives, so-called. And so even when you have Republicans in charge of the House, the Senate, and the governor's seat,
right.
It's not going to work. Whereas the Democrats, if they have all three seats, you may not like what they do, but at least they can come up with a program here and get something passed and make the trains run on time.
Backlash. To whatever Republican, you know, they'll go too far to the left.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, and try, and that'll provide the backlash on the Republican side to come back in a different cycle. One of the arguments
maybe.
Here is we got the ball in the seventh inning and the game wasn't supposed to be over yet.
Yeah.
You know, this was, as we all remember, this was supposed to be Janet Napolitano's
right.
finest hour, right?
Right.
I mean, this was her deal.
But the legislature's been there the whole time.
She left, right. She left. But this would have been her role.
Right.
She would have been having to sit there and deal with this. And I said the leadership in both these bodies was elected, and I would call them as a war cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
These were the people that were going to hold the line with
right.
Governor Napolitano.
Right.
Well, she vacated. We still got the war cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of figuring out that we now have a governor in place and we can tack instead of revolution, you know, we can tack this ship a little bit to the, you know, a little bit this way, a little bit. Instead of doing what the war cabinet wants to do in both bodies is go hard right.
Well, one solution ultimately is that independents will rise up and maybe and somehow we can put this party stuff aside because it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Well, that's going to be the play. In the 2010 cycle, how this rolls out will be, you know, Democrats, Republicans tend to vote their way.
Right.
Republican women seem to migrate more than Democratic women.
Right.
So it will be Republican women and independents have always traditionally been the swing groups.
Right.
And how they react in this cycle, in this 2010 cycle, will be how the state ends up
right.
going.
They may elect the next governor.
Oh, they will.
Mm-hmm. Chuck, let me ask you to handicap this here. We're doing this on June 15th.
Yes.
15 days away from the end of the fiscal year.
I'm going to say we're going to have a budget. by the end of the the month. I know Bob too well.
100%. We'll have a budget.
We will have a budget with a majority of Republican votes on it that she will sign. You know, I just have to believe that because the consequences.
Right.
It's so clear to me, as Republicans, the consequence of not doing that is to say, okay, I'm handing you the ball.
Right.
Whatever I can get done in this 2 years will be upended because we're done. Because if we cannot govern as a party, if this is demonstrated that we can't do this, if the Senate Republicans and the House Republicans can't come to agreement with their a Republican governor, then we will have deservedly lost this election cycle.
Well, then you hand an argument over that someone else needs to take over.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. Now, Steve, you're our biggest Obama fan here. And we all support the president.
Him to fail like another person does?
No, I think I'm fine with him. Did you see his speech on national health care in front of the AMA today?
I did not see the reports? I've read a couple of the reports on it. I have not seen the speech.
I watched the speech, and I will say that, I thought, as usual, he was very impressive. And, first, the last thing I want is so-called national health care, meaning the government's going to run the health care system, a single-payer system. Okay, to me that... Honestly, when I say last, that may be the last thing I can think of that I want them to do. The same people who you can see how they run the rest of government. By the way, while we just talked about, they're going to have Ron Gould down there deciding whether I can have an appendectomy. Great.
He'd give you a lobotomy.
He might give me something else, proctology exam. As a rule, I'm not for that. I'm definitely not for it. However, it's interesting. The president went out of his way to say a few things. One, he's not in favor of a single-payer system, period, no matter what. He's not for it. Two, he said, and he's reading his speech. He went off the prompter a couple times to repeat this. So obviously he feels that there is some miscommunication going on. He said, if you like your current doctor, then no matter what we do here, you will be able to stick with your current doctor, number one. Number two, if you like your current health care provider and the system you're in right now, you will be able to keep your current status quo, period. We're not going to upset that. Now, if you don't like the way it is now for you personally, then we're going to provide some alternatives. But if you like your doctor, you like your health care system that you're in, it will not change except we believe your premiums will end up being less. Now, he said that, then he came back to it again, and he came back to it again. So that's obviously the point he's trying to make. The argument against that, I think, is that when you have the public alternative, the government alternative out there, it becomes a pretty slippery slope. And that, I think what he says is true. Let's say it passed this year and was implemented in 2010 or whenever. 2010, that may be true, but by the time we get to 2015, it probably won't be true. That it'll be very difficult for other companies, other systems to compete with the public system. We'll end up with a single-payer system, which even he, by his own statement, says he's opposed to. That seemed to be the question. But having said that, the president himself is pushing a pretty moderate health care agenda, I think, seemed to me.
Yeah, and it's kind of naive to think that doctors are making all the decisions today. Let's face it, there are bean counters at these HMOs that are making your medical decisions. So when people say, I don't want government making decisions, are you happy with accountants making your medical decisions? I'm not.
That got his biggest response from the doctors is we need to get you away from the bean counting and
absolutely
the bureaucracy and into healing. That's why you became a doctor.
In doing that, I mean, and you hit it. You either, because Massachusetts did this, they compelled. If you didn't have, you were compelled to go into the states. So insurance, just like anything, is a risk pool.
Right.
The more people are in it, the more risk that gets absorbed by the individual, everybody in one pool. And that's I think that's the evolution of this slippery slope. You can say that today. You can say, I'm going to create this. We've done it out here with the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System. And you can see as the economy begins to slow, we've got 20% growth rates. We got hundreds of thousands of more people enrolling in Access today. And I think that's the same thing that would happen on a federal level, too.
Plus, don't you think we can guess what would happen to this? But if we look at where it's in place, other places, that takes the guesswork out of it. And you see what starts happening with the rationing of benefits or the rationing of, oh, you're too old to get a new whatever.
Clearly, I think the majority of the public and of the elected officials do not want that kind of single system. And the president is being very adamant he doesn't want that either, because I don't think that works. It certainly doesn't work for a country as big and diverse as the United States.
But like you said, when the government is the big gorilla, who can compete with that? It's like if somebody wanted to compete with Amtrak.
Yeah. Well, he's saying you can. He's saying it's just like in Arizona, you have access out there.
It'll be a pay-to-play system. It'll be a system whereby if you're wealthy, you can afford to get out of it.
Yep.
You can afford to go get and purchase your own health care. Mm-hmm. If you're not, and you'll go into this system.
Yeah, and there's a whole question whether you want that or not either. I mean, that's a whole, you know, this well, we're a better country. We need everybody to be covered. But if you end up with some sort of caste system there, that's not good either. So
it's tough.
And
McCain's point was, he said during the campaign, was he wanted medical savings accounts. He wanted to be able to incent people to put money aside and take that off the tax, take that, you know, whatever.
That's fine, but that's not going to solve the problem. I mean,
but it does create an incentive to, like, instead of having me, I have a small business. Mm-hmm. I provide a really, you know, everybody in my company has a full benefits plan. You know, they don't pay any of it. Everything, you know, we have 7 employees. It costs our company $5,500 a month. It goes up about 20% every year because we provide those benefits. I would rather, as an employer, give that money to the employees at the firm and put it as a pre-tax number.
Mm-hmm.
So this money goes into your account every year.
But that's the same old problem. And then what happens when they screw that up and then they're sick?
Then you get into the government system where they take care of catastrophic.
Right, okay.
No, I was going to say one of the things that's going to help drive this discussion as opposed to the last time is the fact that the economy is so bad. There are so many people who have lost their jobs. You know, the estimates before have been, 45 to 50 million don't have health care. I saw one statistic over the weekend that it may be as many as 80 million people right now. So about 25% of the country does not have health care right now. The public opinion is going to help drive it, because I don't think, and I don't have scientific research to back this up, but I've got to believe at this point, the majority of people are not happy with their current health care system.
I can't imagine they are.
I got to believe everybody thinks we can do better with something.
You got to come up with the better.
You've got to come up with a better thing. But getting back to the education, and maybe this is, you know, the liberal part of me, but I think a healthy, educated society is good for America.
Of course. Yeah, there's no question.
We've got to find a way to get it done.
I think that for those of us who are really for less government rather than more government, is the president's you can be cynical about it and thinking that, well, he's just trying to get the camel's nose under the tent here,
and there will be a lot of people that believe
but I'm going to take him at on face value here and say that he's coming up with a pretty moderate approach here. And Republicans are playing for the first time in a long time. They're not just saying no, some are playing.
Can't afford to, because most of the voters are in the middle of this demographic.
They're responding.
A big chunk of voters.
AMA's actually involved, different healthcare groups that, the insurance companies, will see how they do. It's predictable probably what they'll do. But you know, who knows? Maybe we'll come up with something here. I have always thought that this argument that in this country we ought to be better than that, it's very problematic to be able to come up with a plan and be able to pay for all of that health care. Having said that, I do think we should be better, a better country than a country that allows children to become ill and not be able to see a doctor because their parents don't have any money. That's just not right, in my view. And we could start there anyway.
It should be easier.
It should be a heck of a lot. That's just not right. It's not, you know, the adults, then it gets problematic. You know, why are they in this position?
Actually, and one of the budget issues down at the Capitol now is kids care, which is part of the health care program. is also the parents of the kids are in the same are an additional insured on that system now. And so, you know, do you, as part of the budget saving maneuver, do you propose taking those parents out, keeping the kids in?
Right. Well, one of
that's a discussion.
Well, I understand that. I can see that.
Yeah.
I could see that's a reasonable view. I don't know where I come down on that, but that's a reasonable view to take the parents out and leave the kids in.
Yeah.
One of the stats I heard today, I heard people talking about this, that kind of puts it into perspective for people. To do this health care plan as it's proposed right now would cost roughly $1 trillion. That's a lot of money, except when you hear the stat that that's about the same amount of money we're going to spend for the Iraq war.
Right.
And it's like health care for
you pointed that
American,
out, too.
You know, yeah.
We obviously had the money. To blow it on the Iraq war, so and the
you
money
know,
is
the Iraq war or health care.
That worked
that
well
going for us, which is nice.
Which is nice.
Yeah, and let's see how did that work out. What have we gained?
Hmm. Don't you think one train of thought I heard that makes sense to me is part of our problem, a big part of our problem is we're asking more of our insurance company than our insurance program than what it's really meant for. It's meant to be a catastrophic kind
right.
of thing. It's meant to be there when you get really sick. It's not supposed to be when you got the sniffles
right.
or you don't want to go to work, and so they say, well, I need a doctor's note. So you go to the doctor, and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to go to a bean counter to get a bean counter to go, I need my, you know, I would like to be able, and I have a relationship with my doctor where I can call up if I have a, you know, head cold or something, mm-hmm. I can say, you know, I got
gallbladder.
You know, yeah, no, that was a long diagnosis on that one, but.
Chuck's
you know,
missing his gallbladder.
Like, yeah, well, so are you. We know the pain of that. It feels like you're having a heart attack, but.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to be able to treat common illnesses so much more easily. The hoops you got to jump through to do that if you don't know. I mean,
well, that's why
it's pretty easy. Call a nurse practitioner, go in and be able to see. You don't need to see the doctor. You can see a nurse practitioner. Go in, you know, they take your blood pressure. They see you got swollen glands. They go, okay, here's some, you know, here's an antibiotic. Check back in with us in 5 days.
Well, that's why we're having, I think, you know, we'll see. But I think we got the right guy to lead this discussion. In Obama, as opposed to Clinton, for example, putting his wife in charge and that whole debacle. And frankly, the people on the other side of the issue were not helpful. They weren't playing in good faith. It was a debacle, okay? Because there's lots to do. I mean, changing the records, you know. The idea that that you've got to go, every time you go to a doctor or a nurse or anybody anywhere, you've got to give this long litany of your records and your history and everything. I mean, in this computer age, it is absolutely ludicrous.
Why
they write them down, all that.
Why can't I have all of my records on my keychain?
Right, and they're changing that. I think we're going that way.
And I should be able to have access, and I should be the custodian of my records.
Yeah, why not?
So, like iMeds.
You should be able to walk into any doctor, plug your medical history into a doctor or nurse practitioner.
Be better for everybody.
Everything that you've had. I can't tell you, when I moved out here as a kid from Michigan, there's no records of everything that happened as a kid. I mean,
well,
that's
going to change.
It has to change.
How we use doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, physicians, assistants, all that, this is a good discussion to have. I mean, we're starting to have it, I think.
On those records, though, would that be like permanent? Would my sex change thing, would that come up every time?
By the way, have you talked to your mother,
Cher? Can I switch?
Yeah.
I need to move across from
her. Well, he's with the Chastity Bono right now.
What was that all about?
No, they're exchanging parts.
Chaz, please.
Chaz Bono.
Chaz actually looks better than Chastity.
Yes.
So I'm not, I really don't have much of an opinion, but I'm not opposed to it. But you asked me that question off air. And I did look it up. Is that how do you do that that female to male thing? Because there's an operation called an adidectomy.
Yes.
And I think she had that.
Well, it's not as complicated as the chop a dick off of me. That is really.
I think that's a little more painful.
That way,
I just can't see
it's
that.
The bobbit.
Bobbitize it. Yeah.
Yes.
There's
yeah.
like some clinic up in Colorado that's like famous for this, and it's like.
Are we really going here? No.
I like the way he acts like he does it. Somewhere up in Colorado.
It's like.
No, I don't. It's some small
10
town.
Miles southeast of Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it'd be near Colorado
Avenue.
Springs.
It might be.
There before?
Yeah, might be.
They've had a few. Boulder.
Yeah.
Who was the preacher up there? Haggard. Ted Haggard.
Yeah, Ted Haggard.
He moved here.
Yeah.
Did you guys see that documentary on him?
No.
I watched it. I forgot what it was called, but it was done by Pelosi's daughter, and I don't know how. I felt sorry for him.
I don't think there's any way not to feel sorry.
I felt sorry for
somebody
him.
Somebody to take such an enormous tumble.
And here's the thing about him. You know, my God, it isn't like he turned into a murderer or a child molester or something like that. He was a hypocrite. Okay, yeah. He was up there doing his religious bit and secretly gay or whatever. Whatever. So what? I mean, that's not good. I can see why they said, okay, you're not going to be the preacher anymore. But my God, they acted like he had,
he
killed 10
fewer
people.
Fewer people than Bernie Madoff did.
Oh, not even close. Exactly.
Right. That guy ruined people's lives.
Exactly. And last time I read the New Testament, I don't get the expulsion. That sounds kind of like expulsion. Never come back and never contact us again. For 3 years, you're going to go in the wilderness.
Double
and,
secret probation.
And the wilderness is Scottsdale.
The guy and they tacked him to the cross.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, these people went insane on him.
Yeah.
And so anyway, if you followed the documentary, he actually came to Scottsdale, and it was
a forgiving environment.
Well, it didn't work out for him. It was someone said, "Hey, we got a house there, and you can stay there free."
I think I saw him at
he was broke.
Radius.
I think you saw him in Barcelona.
No,
Barcelona.
You did not see him at either one of those. No, he was applying for jobs that were just terrible jobs, and couldn't get hired. And he would kind of tell him, okay, I had a little problem there, but, hey, he's obviously very successful at his day. He was talking regularly to the president, George W. Bush,
oh, yeah.
Like monthly, advising him and everything. And he couldn't get a job at Home Depot. I mean, he was trying, and he couldn't do it.
You know where I see him? Your reality show.
Well, he'd be great on a reality show. Yeah.
The Dukes of Haggard.
Get me out of here. Dupes of Haggard. I like it. The Dupes of Haggard. Hey, suggest that to him. He moved home. He did finally move home. No, but honestly, if you watched him and him with his family and everything, it was bad. I mean, he lost everything.
Right, but he also hasn't. When people get themselves in trouble, first off, if you get yourself in trouble, if you're likable, people will give you a second chance in life. They'll give you a break. Like, people liked Clinton. Sure, he screwed up, but, hey, we like Bill Clinton. We'll give you a second chance. And you see that with all the huge...
Haggard was likable.
Haggard was not likable, and he has not done a lot to, restore his image. You're starting to see Elliot Spitzer try to come out of the...
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
No, you are. You're starting to see him do some interviews.
Yeah,
I know
really.
They're trying. No, but here's the thing on Haggard. They sent him away, and he didn't do a big PR thing until... this movie was coming out. Mm-hmm. He was literally out in the wilderness. It was gone. It's like he didn't exist anymore. Don't talk to me. Don't call us. You're broke. We don't care. Your kids are don't have any money anymore. You don't have 5 cents from. We don't care. Get out of here.
What
now, what is he supposed
Christians
to do
up there?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's hypocritical on their part.
That's part of the biggest part.
But what was he supposed to do? Go on Larry King? No, he didn't do that. He actually was trying to make. $5. So I felt sorry for the guy.
What's Spitzer trying to do to reinvent himself?
With the Wall Street debacle, yeah. He was kind of like, hey, see, I told you. Uh-huh. You should have stuck with me and not worried about my prostitutes.
There's some credibility there, but, you
well, it's like Clinton. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, Clinton and Monica Lewinsky compared to Bush,
Right. Well, there's nobody righteous out there. We've all learned that.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I remember getting into this business.
Well, speaking of which,
John Edwards is.
I remember 25 years ago getting into this business.
John Edwards.
I met John McCain in Ohio.
He's righteous.
First campaign that I ever did.
He's righteous.
And it was as close. I will say this. It was as close to I'll ever get to mm-hmm. finding somebody in politics who could claim that mantle.
And that was in the first day you met him.
Yeah, well, but as close as it ever got. I mean, he's not.
Downhill from there?
We both know him. Well, of course. I mean, like everything.
Wait. You work for me.
Remember
this is bullshit.
Remember the first
come on.
Remember the first
thought of that.
Remember the first thing John McCain said to you when he met you?
Did you hear that?
What's that?
Remember the first thing John said to you, my friend?
I think it was get the car.
Yeah, get the car, my friend. Okay, we have to do the Woody here, and then I have a couple more questions for you, and then we'll be done.
Speaking of McCain, I heard an interesting thing today on the radio. Remember those pictures of McCain when he first got out of the...
Yes.
How bad it was?
Yes.
Did you see the guy, the released Gitmo prisoners... swimming in the...
Oh, yeah.
They're in
Bermuda.
The Bahamas.
Yeah.
They're in the Bahamas. Yeah.
In the Bermuda.
A little different.
Yeah, it is.
They're having
Bermuda.
Mai Tais on the beach and swimming in the ocean.
Yeah, I know.
And then you see McCain who can walk.
Right, right. Yeah, can barely walk.
It tells
crutches.
You how we're treating him in Gitmo. Yeah.
I know, it's rough.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's rough. And, well, one of them, he wasn't waterboarded, but he got caught in the undertow in Bermuda when he was body surfing. And it was kind of
drowned.
He thought he was drowning for a couple
Scotch
seconds.
Scotch waterboarded.
Okay, let's do this. And big controversy. And See, when Carrie holds the Woody, that's fine. A little different than Steve.
Steve holding the Woody.
We've got the mic in front of him.
Is he going to say something?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a little delusional here.
It's the Woody.
Okay,
Woody.
By the way, we are broadcasting from Marley's, we should point out. We're in the Cotton Club, named after Cotton Fitzsimmons, one of the all-time great guys, and we appreciate Marley's and their sponsorship. And if it wasn't the afternoon, we'd be drinking Anheuser-Busch products. We appreciate Hensley.
And by the way, this is the original Marley's, but there are now two more.
Oh, two.
Well, there's one in Chandler.
Chandler's great.
One opening next month in Goodyear.
Really?
Yes, and it's going to be rocking.
By the ballpark out there?
Yeah, by the ballpark.
Rocking in Goodyear.
So this is the original of the three.
Yes.
This shows you what a great businessman Colangelo was. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting the Woody presentation.
That's fine.
This shows you what a great businessman Jerry Colangelo was, because he waited to build the arena until he saw where Marley's was going to put his restaurant.
You know, that was smart.
Location.
That was good.
And then he said, wow, there's Marley's. Boom. Build the ballpark.
Okay, we got to, and then we're going to ask Mark to comment on this controversy here. Obviously, I'm weighing in here. Okay, that was Woody Interruptus, by the way, but that's okay.
Interruptus.
Okay, this week's Woody goes to David Letterman.
Oh.
Now, David Letterman had the chance to ingratiate himself to the heartland the past few weeks as an alternative to Conan O'Brien. Now that this generation's Bob Hope, a.k.a. Jay Leno, Steve's hero, has moved on. Letterman was a little too edgy or cynical for many red staters, so they made Jay number one over the years. And Conan may be a little too Bart Simpson for all these Ned Flanders types out there. So now is a perfect time to make a run at them, but forget all that now. Instead of reaching out to them, Dave picked a fight with one of their icons, their political Britney Spears, the almost vice president, Sarah Palin. Cracked a joke about her daughter getting knocked up by Yankee star Alex Rodriguez while she and her mom were at a recent game, and Sarah called foul. Dave offered the excuse he was talking about her 18-year-old daughter, who had famously gotten knocked up before and then embarked on an abstinence tour. Mm-hmm. But Palin labeled that as lame, which it was. Joke wasn't funny. Out of bounds. Clearly it was about the 14-year-old, the one who was at the game, who's never done anything to subject herself to this ridicule. The children of politicians should be off limits. Even Austin Woods over there. Even when they're being shamelessly exploited by their parents. Ridicule the parents, not them. Believe me, 9 times out of 10, they would have no part of any of it if the kids had the choice themselves. I'm no fan of Sarah Palin. She performed as well as she could as a VP candidate, but she was a ridiculous choice. She remains a ridiculous choice for anything outside of Fairbanks or the centerfold of Field and Stream. But David Letterman, with his continued destructive behavior toward conservative political figures, is keeping them relevant and in the news. In many circles, it's not so bad to be in a feud with the liberal elites from New York City. Dave is keeping her political career alive for this and for his lame joke about her kid. David Letterman gets the Woody. Okay? Thank you. Now, what do you think?
Well deserved.
Mark, comedian here. I know you've done some...
I just think that the joke about Sarah Palin herself...
Fine, yeah.
But the kids, you know, you just... I just don't think that it was in good taste, classy at all. I don't think it made him look good to anybody. Mm-hmm. For the quick joke... I mean, you know, I could come out with a joke about his kid, who, by the way, was born before his mm-hmm. – he was born a bastard.
Yeah, you could do bastard jokes or something.
You know,
that's not funny.
And he was going to get sodomized by Barney Frank. I don't think that would make him a giant circle.
That probably wouldn't be popular. No,
know,
it wouldn't.
Probably will happen. But my point is – no. you know, and this thing about, oh, she exploited the kids by taking them out. You know, come on. I mean, the most famous picture I ever saw of a kid – the child of a politician was John at the funeral of JFK,
right,
saluting the coffin.
Right.
And no one mocked that. No one made fun of that. Oh, he had it coming. They were parading him out there in front of the cameras.
Right.
You know, come on. It's just bad
taste. Your kids are going to be around.
I would put one example. Unless the kid, under his own auspices,
does something,
makes him or herself a target of ridicule, such as the son of the former mayor of New York City.
I love that kid.
Rudy Giuliani.
I don't love him now, but I loved him then.
Who was removed from the North Carolina golf team recently.
Oh, yeah, that's insane.
For boorish behavior, sued in federal court to get reinstated, lost, and the most remarkable thing, the federal judge quoted none other than the esteemed Carl Spackler.
Nice.
Those of you who aren't fans of Caddyshack. Carl was the greenskeeper in that movie where he was quoted as saying, he's on a 455-yard par four. It looks like he's got a two-iron, which was the quote the federal judge used to compare.
Give that judge credit.
Yeah, yeah. Give that on the merits of that young man's case. So, but I guess he graduated with a degree in sociology, so, you know, he's got that going for him.
Hey, you know what? Nice. Remember that kid? Hey, that's my daughter's major, so knock it out. That kid, that was one of the great moments of all time.
Yeah.
When Giuliani's giving a speech and his own kid is just gooning him in the background. And no one removed him. He just kept it up, like, you know, with the blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, oh, big guy. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic.
So as a rule, I'm with that until the kid makes it.
Yeah. Well, and he's an adult now.
And if you're going to open that up to every kid, I mean, I haven't even heard anybody doing any jokes about Biden's daughter.
No.
Who on YouTube, you can see her doing, she keeps complaining that the line of Coke isn't big enough.
Is that right? I haven't seen that.
Yeah,
that's
YouTube
not good.
Wow.
Well, they've left that off. Yeah, that's exactly right. Leave it all. The Bush girls, you know, they were party girls and all that.
Yeah.
There wasn't much about that.
Just forget it.
Leave him alone.
You know, no one talked about
it. But what's with Dave anyway? He had the big feud with McCain. And
I think it's Dave being Dave.
Yeah, just doesn't care. He's grouchy.
Cranky.
He's very cranky.
He's the East Coast comedian. I mean, he's the cranky, you know.
Just real snarky. You know, I think that's
first century Lenny.
Well, that ain't going to play.
A little nicer, not as mean, you know.
Yeah, Lenny Bruce, great. That'll be popular in the heartland, the red states. Okay, a couple more questions and you can go. Greatest of all time, greatest coach of all time, basketball, Phil Jackson? Yes or no? Steve?
Yes.
I just can't let my disdain for him give an objective answer.
If you
go by the records, yes, but, you know.
Okay.
Great. I just don't like it.
I would say, I don't know that I'd put coach under that, but greatest manager of people. Because in the NBA, I read his book, on the Season on the Brink. And he said some things in there, which stuck with me from a management perspective. One of the things he said was, you know, I manage millionaires all day. And I cannot, for every one thing I say negatively to them, I have to say at least 10 things positive.
Amazing, yeah.
When that's with guys who are getting paid, you know.
That's problem coaching in the NBA.
Figures. And so I think the triangle, you know, the offense, I'm not a basketball, but he certainly is unbelievable manager of people.
That one play they've got that give the ball to Kobe and get the hell out of the way. That is a great play. He stole that from Chicago.
He stole that from give the ball to Michael and get the hell out of the way.
And Scotty, you run and play defense and get the hell out of the way.
I'm going to vote no on greatest coach of all time. I think you made a good point. I mean, he's done what he's done. But, I mean, for example, Johnny Wooden, maybe if you just say pro coach, maybe that. Is he the greatest pro coach of all time?
That's what you're asking.
I could say that. Greatest basketball coach of all time. Red's got to be right there, though.
I mean, again,
and he actually coached.
A similar type of reasoning. I mean, he had the courage to go.
Yes, he did.
I'm going to go put African American. I'm going to go put African Americans lineup. I'm going to go.
But just basketball, I don't see how you could knock.
And
Wooden.
He didn't even coach. Just coach. He was also the front office.
Yeah, he did the whole thing.
So I mean. Talk about Hamilton.
North Carolina, you know, we got some coaches.
We got some coaches there, so I don't know about that. Okay, I got another one for you. Tennis is the big deal now. I was kind of surprised that, it was pretty much consensus after the French Open, Roger Federer, the greatest tennis player of all time. And I'll start. I'm going to say no on that. Not yet. And it's not because of Rod Laver and Bjorn Borg and those guys. I do think he's clearly better than them. I don't have any – there is no doubt about that. Now, then you can get in the debate about eras and equipment and all that. I mean, I got a Wilson T2000 from high school sitting in my office, the old Jimmy Connors thing, and that's a lethal weapon, that thing. Yeah. Oh, it's insane, you know, compared to today. So,
not burglars down.
Oh, I do, yeah. It's the thing weighs a ton. The little steel things are sticking out. They're sharp. You can kill yourself on that. But as far as just who, I mean, if you're just going to go who's the greatest player, then I don't think there's any question Federer is better than all those guys, in my opinion. But He is like 7-13 against Nadal. And now, if you weren't the best player of your time, are you the best player of all time? So I'm going to say Nadal. I'm going to say the jury's out because Nadal is so young. We got to wait and see how Nadal does. But if Nadal continues to win slams, then I don't see how you could put Federer above Nadal when Nadal has really cleaned his clock.
It's comparable to the Tiger-Jack comparison.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's next on my list.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And Tiger and Jack.
Well, I will throw Byron Nelson into that one because Byron won 16 PGA
that's
tournaments
sick.
In a row.
Mm-hmm.
So will that record – that record will
That'll never fall.
That's gonna
Wooden's record
forever.
Will never fall.
He can't give it to Jack because Jack's from Ohio.
Yeah, well, he's a Buckeye.
Yeah.
So that's wow. I'm not going there.
Tiger Woods will finish as the greatest player.
I think he will, too. I don't think there's any – I don't think he's there yet. But if he passes Nicklaus's record – you know, the whole deal we'll see when he has a family and all that, and injury, which mm-hmm. is legitimate. And he could get injured tomorrow and be done, and he would not be the greatest player of all time.
Like Ben but, Hogan got injured.
Yeah, I mean, but it's – I think you're going to end up saying Tiger Woods is the greatest golfer of all time.
He's clearly, I think, the fiercest competitor. I mean, there's a lot of competition. Golf is one of these games where it's known for, mm-hmm. the steely determination.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, he's the best.
Because the nerves, all the voices in your head and everything. He seems to have, at this point in time, the best
right.
control.
Right. And he's going to run up numbers ultimately like Gretzky in hockey, where they're just phenomenal.
Uh-oh.
You know,
numbers.
What makes me
going to hockey next?
No, we're not. Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah. Oh. Red Wings.
What really blows my mind about the old school golfers, go mm-hmm. look at some old golf equipment.
Terrible.
It's just hilarious when you go, how did those guys...
Chuck and I played a couple of weeks ago, and I had an old driver, and it wasn't even that old. I'm talking like 5, 6, 7 years old that somehow was in my bag. And so I said, I'll just hit it for fun. Oh, my God, it's like hitting it with a brick.
Yeah.
And that's 5 or 6 years ago. Try 60 years ago.
Go those find an old persimmon with it's like an iron hanging from. I mean,
terrible.
That you iron clothes with hanging off the end of it, and you're trying to smack a ball straight. And the balls were wound, and
that's what you don't know. I mean, if you put today's equipment in Byron Nelson's hands, Ben Hogan's hands,
or something, if you put today's equipment in those guys. But I don't know.
I think there's a couple of sports that those guys from yesteryear. If they had today's equipment, they would be as good. And I'll tell you, one of them is golf because of the swing. I think those guys are just as good. And the other one is baseball.
Yeah,
I think Ted Williams could bat 400 today off these guys.
Yeah.
I really do. The pitching isn't necessarily better today than it was in those days. I think he could do it because you've got a lot more pitchers out there. Now, if you go to basketball, I guarantee you Bob Cousy couldn't make Arizona State's team. Next year, which is not good.
But he's the same age as Harden.
No,
let me ask you this.
There's only a handful of guys from the old days that could play today, and
Wilt.
Football's another one.
Wilt could.
Oh, sure. There's some of them who could. Kareem could, guys like that. But you go back very far, and you couldn't. Football, most of them in the old days could not play today.
Well,
they're so much bigger, so much faster today.
Well, that's the thing. If you look at the size, especially in the defense or offensive line, it's like, 200 pounds and 6'1" as an offensive lineman 40 years ago.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
Today, you'd be dwarfed. Today, you'd be defensive back.
Bigger and faster.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. If Ted Williams was in the major leagues today,
yes.
How much money would he earn a year?
Oh, my God. $20 million.
Well, keep in mind, he'd be 80.
Well, $15 million. Well, he wouldn't strike out as much as Mark Reynolds, even at 80, I don't think.
Although, you know what?
He's coming back. He's my boy. I love Mark, and we're okay. Those three
are
good.
I love that he just...
Yesterday.
Hmm?
He put one in the seats yesterday.
I just love that he goes out there and he goes, you know what? This is what I do.
Yeah, I'm going to swing as hard as I can.
Four with four extra base hits.
Right.
I'm going to wear the sombrero.
Upton, Reynolds, and Drew, you stick with those three guys.
Mark Reynolds... get in the home run derby this year?
No.
Can't screw up his swing.
I mean, he would be exciting to see in a home run derby.
You don't have to worry about screwing up his swing.
Burns in the home run derby.
That would be great.
Eric Burns. How great would that be? He goes through the first two rounds with no homers.
Oh, no. I thought you meant to shag balls. No, I don't want him batting.
With the kids?
Yeah, and doing the somersaults. Oh, that guy. I'm so sick of him.
$10 million a year.
Don't even give
he
it.
He ran out yesterday on the field. The kids, you know, it was one of the Sunday games where the kids run out with him.
Yeah.
He blew the kid off, and he ran way ahead of him. And this kid is working his tail off to try and keep up. The kid blows his shoe out. The insole on the shoe comes flying out. The kid keeps running after him, and Bird's like, finally stops, and he's like, oh, I got a kid chasing after me.
He's clueless. He needs to go with the skateboards and give up baseball. That's what I think. Okay, I think we're done, are we?
That's a show.
All right, thanks. Is that a show?
That's a show.
That's a show. Chuck, good luck down there.
Thank you.
Tell the governor good luck.
And your prayers.
Okay.
Just for everybody's sake, we all ought to be just calm and thoughtful about how we get through this.
That's right.
It does have impacts.
Well, that's why, just like I tell people, you got to be pulling for Obama. Even if you disagree, you want him to do well. We want the governor to do well.
I want him to do well.
We want Governor Brewer to do well.
Over the next 2 weeks.
I haven't been getting a lot to begin with.
Buy a lottery ticket on the way back down there.
Yeah.
Give it to the state.
All right. That's the show.